My face currently feels like I've been run through by Tom Stewart.
Puts it to the top of the square. Oh, beautiful little fist in there by Dale. Crucial centimetre moments.
He definitely has a bit of the Belcho spirit. as I have a bit of the Belcho spirit.
Hello and welcome to The Back Pocket, the podcast this week came under intense scrutiny for a drug scandal thanks to the copious amounts of cold and flu meds that have been consumed in this household.
We are testing positive on every test.
We taunted it last episode by saying we didn't have COVID and then both got COVID 2 days later.
Yeah.
And had a horrible weekend, but we had to stay home and watch football. That was the one, well, sort of.
We watched football, but I barely remember it.
It was a bit like that. My name is Jack. I'm joined, as always, by Alistair.
Hi, everyone. I'm here, but I'm also quite sick.
We're going to jump into the Scarlet Skilvani medal votes.
You've got to have Skilvani to get the medal.
Which is a 5-4-3-2-1 for the round based on the best defenders for actual defensive acts, spoils, intercept marks, yada, yada. Shall we roll into it? Who was your one vote?
It's going to
be chaos round this week.
Chaos round. I'm going completely off vibes because I'm too sick to look up stats. My one vote goes to Brandon Zirk Thatcher.
Brilliant. That's my two.
All right. That works. I'm happy with that.
So Brandon Zirk Thatcher.
Means you've got stats.
I've got the stats. So he only had 12 touches. 6 of those were intercepts. 5 contested. He got 3 coaches' votes. So obviously impressed with the coaches. We were talking about it during the week that he's looked the better of their chaos backline. He also had 5 spoils, won 7 out of 7 one-on-ones, 5 rebounds. They were pushed by Richmond for most of that game, much more than I thought they were going to be. So it was pretty good from him to play the way he did. Richmond's forward line is still one of their places they've got players.
That's their best line.
I was impressed with him. My one vote this week was to Josh Battle. He had 24 disposals, 12 of those were intercepts, 7 marks, 2 of those were intercepts, 4 spoils, 4 rebounds, 9 defensive half-pressure acts for a big man was pretty impressive as well. And that one was really just I had that down before I looked at his stats. I thought he was really good on the day.
I didn't look at his stats, and he's my two votes.
He's your
so
two?
You can knock that one
Brilliant.
Down.
Brilliant. That is a great start. Who is your three then?
So this is where I ran into a bit of issue because you went on a big 12-minute rant the other day about how he wasn't that good because they were playing West Coast. My three votes go to Sam
He's
Taylor.
He's my four. I wasn't saying he wasn't that good. I was just saying that there was a lot of
You said he was useless.
There was a lot of media hype around him. Being like, he's just reaffirmed himself as the best defender in the comp. But he did play West Coast. But he was by four. He was
playing on Jake Waterman, which is...
Yeah, his stats do kind of speak for themselves. He had 17 touches and all but 3 of those were intercepts. 14 intercept disposals, 10 contested, had 10 marks, 9 of those were intercepts, 6 contested. 7 spoils, won all 7 of his one-on-ones, 11 defensive half-pressure acts and 10 coaches' votes. The tax... takes him to still good because there wasn't many defenders that were...
It was not a good round for it. Well, at least from what I remember.
There was one game I looked at, I can't remember which game it was, where there was only it was the Bulldogs Gold Coast game, where the max amount of one-on-ones any player had was 2.
Sam Collins, I think, got votes in that game.
Which is Sam Collins, who I've given my 3 votes to.
Okay.
He was good as well. Take out the fact that he only had 2 one-on-ones. He had 16 disposals at 100%. 10 of those were intercepts. 5 contested, 10 marks. 6 of those were intercepts. 7 spoils, 3 rebounds, 9 pressure acts. Big man was good. They struggled, and he tried his best to stop Bulldogs from murdering them, really.
I've got a lot of love for Sam Collins. And I guess that makes this the most controversial entry.
So who's your 4?
In the canon so far this year. Is Nisiah Wanganeen-Millara.
Okay, yeah.
So is he a defender? Yes, technically.
He's saying yes for this week at least. He was brilliant, wasn't he? He provided was
insane. Elite.
Great game. I don't have the stats in front of me because I didn't have him in my votes.
Do you want me to look him up really quick? Say some stuff.
Go for it. I'll run through some special mentions. The Petrarca spoil alone.
That's worth
special
a vote.
Special mention to the Petrarca spoil. Toby Pink.
Toby Pink was actually
special
really quite
his
good.
His first half was good. He had 4 intercept marks, 7 spoils, 3 rebounds. Unironically, Billy Frampton in the special mentions this week.
It wasn't
terrible. He cost a couple of goals, but he had 10 intercepts, 5 of those are marks and 6 spoils.
All right, so Nasiah Wanganeen-Millerer, 32 disposals, 25 kicks, 11 marks, 90% defensive half, 81% efficiency, 8 intercept possessions, 10 pressure acts, 613 metres gained, 4 rebound 50s, 4 1 percenters. That gets you 4
pretty,
votes.
Pretty good. What was your percentage of defensive-offensive balance?
90-10, I said. 90% oh,
yeah,
defensive.
All right, yeah, I'll take it.
I mean, that definitely looks like he's playing wing, but I think we're counting him as a defender.
That's all right, yeah, yeah. If you have that much defensive half in a game that you win, you get defensive points.
Okay, all right.
We'll call it that.
It's the COVID tax.
Undisputed 5 for one of the best defender games we've seen with Tom Stewart again. I don't know if the Adelaide strategy of kick it to Tom Stewart for the first half was the best strategy.
It's a strategy that I wouldn't employ a team to take.
I also don't think the second half strategy of kick it to Cole Dashney was any better. 10 coaches' votes. Equaled and was robbed of breaking by a soccer that was called not 15 off the boot instead of waiting for it to travel the distance. The intercept mark record. 28 disposals.
Doesn't he share that with Radaglia?
Isn't it Liam Jones?
Oh, it's Liam Jones. That's right. Yeah.
which is a good on him. 28 disposals at 89%, 15 of those were intercepts, 7 contested, 11 marks, 10 intercepts, 3 contested, 4 spoils, 9 rebounds, 3 out of 3 one-on-ones, more one-on-ones in that game than Moore's had all year.
Wasn't he the top fantasy scorer as well?
6 score ranking launches, points. 4 defensive half pressure acts and 613 metres gained is insane. 6 score launches. He was brilliant, but a part of it is that Adelaide just picked him out half the time. Like, there was a lot of them were contested. Like, we said, 10 contested marks is huge. But he also had so many times where they were just bombing it over the top to no one.
They seem to lack a system going forward, which is strange considering how well they went last year for it.
Their forward line should be their strength.
It's an interesting watch with them at the moment. Not quite sure what their goal is. But they extended their coach, so who
they
cares?
They did just before that game, and their fans were stoked about that one online. That was... My final special mentions were to Ben Miller, who might be the issue solved down back for Richmond in the long run. He had 5 intercept possessions, 2 intercept marks, won 6 out of his 8 one-on-ones, 10 defensive half pressure acts, 6 rebounds and 12 spoils, which
it's pretty good
against a pretty tall forward line in what was their weakest line, especially with Broad out as well. I thought he did a pretty serviceable job under the conditions anyway, so...
Good job, Ben Miller.
Did you have any other special mentions? I'm doubting it, considering you struggled to get your numbers out this week at all.
I wrote down 5 names based on vibes, and here we are.
I came up with... This was probably the worst week to try and launch it, but obviously I came up with some segments for us. So I've got my bits for the segments.
I've got no bits.
You don't have to. My one that I titled the Back Pocket Tribune, which is to try and come up with the most Herald Sun / Kane Corns-esque headline you can. I wrote Pariah Carey. Disgraced former star declares self leader of pro-concussion movement. I just liked Pariah Carey, frankly.
I was just going to say AFL caught in drug scandal.
But that's not really inflammatory, is it? That's just a fair headline.
You asked me a week ago, I would have said, oh, not again, but here we are.
I did the pops and flops segment. I did my three.
Why didn't you message me and ask me?
I told you about them, but I forgot. Because we were working and COVID... My three highlights of the week were the cut and dry nature of the right suspension. I think it was great that it was just handled and done, and despite the fanfare and stupidity.
Hold on, explain the segment to me.
Three good things, pops, and 3 bad things, flops.
Okay. Pop, the fireworks that went off during the presentation.
That was great. Essendon's like, and that concludes our presentation. Yeah, I thought the cut and dry nature of that was good. Like, it just was sent to tribunal, was given 4 weeks, was accepted 4 weeks, and we're all moving on. My other pop is just that Collingwood 0-3 to start is funny, from just a neutral perspective and from the way they carried on last year perspective. And us calling Tom Green Brownlow is looking great, frankly.
I mean, if Isaac Heaney keeps it up, he's got something to say about it. But
Heaney's is the more spectacular. But yeah, Tom Green's been probably enough. They're probably both on 9 votes. My flops are that the AFL review system needs to chill the fuck out.
They went a bit hard.
It was a crazy Adelaide game. The Adelaide game, and then also the Gold Coast Bulldogs game. there was some that you just watched the ball go past the post about half a foot away and they're like, yeah, can we just review that didn't hit the post? We don't need to. It's all good.
There's two conspiracies behind it. One, it's so the Adelaide chill out now that they've had a home game and they go, all right, they are reviewing stuff again. Or, like you said, it's to sell sponsorships.
My other flop is one that we didn't end up talking about on the podcast last week and we should have before it got ruined, was the rule of 86.
Ah, 86. We should just leave that.
it's still 17 out of 19 times this season been correct.
First 86 wins.
Yeah, so first 86 wins are still correct. Only two teams have gone past 86 in a loss, and that's Essendon and Richmond on the weekend. Mm. Essendon doing it first just feels wrong to me. But
yeah.
It's been done. And then my flop is just Adelaide's performance against Geelong's
midfield. Not good.
If you've got a midfield that is Laird, Dawson and Crouch, and you can have Rankin roll through there and Rochelle, and you're losing to... Bruin wasn't even there, so it's Parfitt, Dangerfield...
Odd one string.
I can't even remember who was the third mid. They played most of the
games. Jai Clark,
obviously, who was good, but not without being great. They won the ball out of there so often just straight to a Geelong player who moved it the other way. It was... Adelaide should have been very disappointed with that performance.
I think they will be.
On paper, they were a six-goal. We talked about it last week. We said 6-8-goal better side. And they lost it by 4 goals, saved by a Rankin goal in junk time.
Mm.
Really disappointing performance from a team that should have been pushing for finals this year.
Well, I'm not doing three of each.
You don't have to.
I would say pop, North Melbourne's first half, flop, North Melbourne's second half.
Fremantle's second half, flop, Fremantle's first half.
No, I think you can get jumped by a side, but when you get turned around like that, that's different.
Let that be a lesson to but all teams this year, that if you are 5 goals up against Fremantle, you're in trouble.
I don't know. What else is good?
Flop, drug saga?
Yeah, I don't even know where to start with that, to be honest.
It's such a weird one. Oh, also, we'd like to be one of the only places that reports that Max King did get a week. His 1 week ban was upheld and he will not be playing this weekend. we had to look it up.
Which is the concerning thing because it doesn't help how I feel about that Essendon St Kilda game.
No, because both teams marking forward target.
But I also think that the rate that Essendon gets scored against in games, they'll just get taken apart by St Kilda's speed.
Yeah, what did you say? You looked at what they kicked against. It was 130 and 110 or something?
Their first game, they had 28 scoring shots, and they only scored 22 themselves. And then in the second game, they had 36 kicked against them, which is far and away above what you want from a defensive side.
We talked about how the defence was going to be their issue this year.
Ben McKay looks out of sorts. I don't know if he's carrying something or he's just not fitting in right at the moment in that lineup, but something going on there. But at the same time, is Membry enough to take him on?
Maybe. If it's good Membry, but it's been good Membry 2 weeks in a row, so...
Yeah.
Do you get it three times?
That's the most 50-50 game for me this week. Not even Brisbane-Collingwood. I think that one's firmly in Brisbane's favour, but...
Knows.
Yeah, that's the toss-up for me.
I got a quiz section for you, but you don't have to do anything here other than answer the questions. I'm just going to come in with a couple for you each week.
Jesus Christ.
The first one is, to our amazement, when Michael Walters kicked his 350th goal last week, we learned that he's their second top goal scorer of all time.
Oh, shit.
Who's their third?
It's a great question.
I wouldn't have known off the top of my head, and then I saw it and went, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Kepler Bradley.
Hayden Ballantyne.
Oh, yeah, that makes the most sense.
He's only 30 ahead of Jeff Farmer, who obviously played most of his football for true. Melbourne.
I like the idea that it's Kepler Bradley instead.
Let's just pretend it's Kepler Bradley. Since they've been recorded in 1995, this is podcast relevant, who has the all-time record for one percenters?
One percenters?
Mm.
It's Dustin Fletcher.
90% spoils. Fletcher's up there. Harris Andrews.
Okay. Yeah, I believe that.
He averages 9.4 a game.
Yeah.
He's got the highest average and highest all-time.
What's the top five? Do you have them on hand?
I don't have them on hand. I was going to keep them up, but then they're on my work computer, not this one. Who during the week said this? I actually thought Peter Wright tried to get out of the way. Was it A, Mason Cox, B, John Ralph, C, Eddie Maguire, or D, Damian Barrett?
Gotta be A.
It was Eddie Maguire.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No. He said that on his show with Drew Bartel. He said, I actually thought Peter Wright tried to get out of the way.
Did he watch the footage?
Clearly not. My fun fact is that Mason Cox hasn't tweeted since the season started.
Yeah, I wonder why.
For probably fair enough reasons.
Someone at the club told him not to, maybe?
Yeah, that was an Eddie statement, which is crazy.
There is a permanent imprint of Harry Cunningham's face on Peter Wright's chest.
You know when
you've
been sleeping on your shoulder for too long and you leave that ear mark? Yeah. I reckon that was what was on Peter Wright's shoulder after that moment. Like, that one shocked me. I thought I had to chuck that in there.
Yeah, that's insane. I don't know. I did listen to a Wayne Carey bit, but I avoid Eddie Maguire.
I heard it again, and I realised that just the way he worded it made it sound like he was never going to watch again. It's just that he can't string a sentence together properly. He did just mean
for as long as he's suspended. Yeah. It's a shame. We're almost rid of Wayne Carey
how
forever.
Good would that have been? I don't know who's going to keep his job if he's not going to watch football.
Well, it's 4 weeks. He's got a podcast where he's not going to fucking.
his mate's going to come on and be like, "Hey, Wayne, so what do you think?" Like, I don't know.
I'm just not going to watch footy for 4 weeks, Jack. How would you feel about that?
I'd be troubled. The votes could be as blind as this week, though.
Hey!
That's not true. We got pretty close to the same votes, frankly. Friday night, BT, as well as talking about prawn nets, complained about player weights not being listed for longer than was necessary. And then they were talking about boxing, like it's not a totally different sport. But then later on I learned that, like, when he thought Zach Guthrie was Ollie Dempsey, why he needs player weights listed, because he can't clearly tell the difference between a bloke who's twice the size of another one.
In his defence, there are eight people on that Geelong field with the blonde hair and headband.
There are. It's becoming an epidemic.
It's seriously.
And I'm wondering if Toby Conway just needs to get the headband on to get it.
They need someone to step in and dye some of those fuckers' hairs.
Are there no hairdressers in...
No.
On that side of the peninsula? Just none.
Well, there is one, and they do one specific haircut.
They're like, do you like those really thin, strappy headbands? That's why I respect James A. Shanks. Because most modern footballers that have the long hair wear the strappy one. He's got the thick,
I like it.
Proper headband.
It's very 90s.
Yeah, very retro.
He wears the glove as well and the half sleeves.
Yeah,
he's got a look.
It's good stuff. I'm here for it. Someone took it off the other day.
What,
Zach
his glove?
Someone pulled his headband off.
Isn't that a...
No, it was more of not an... Like a... Yeah. Kind of came off, got dropped.
Weak.
Other highlights of this week for me were Pies fans complaining about Papley calling Essendon fake tough because of how Sydney targeted Dacos. Papley didn't say that you can't do that stuff. He just said that Essendon are fake tough and not good. Like
you
that,
need to do it and then walk the walk at the same time.
His point was more that Essendon haven't proven anything yet.
No. They beat a Hawthorn who, if kicked accurately, would have beaten them, who then went on to kick, 30 points against Melbourne the next week?
It must be a tough place for Scott to be in at the moment, because he did come out pre-season and say, like, this list is not the list shaped for one that's challenging, it's one that we're building.
But the media can't listen.
That's not what the fans or media are expecting from this team. I was trying to find a voice clip earlier, and I found AFL 360 talking about Essendon in 2020. After their yearly massive loss to Geelong where Hawkins kicks a million goals. That was literally the week it had happened that time. And they were talking about, you know, the Essendon team handing over to Rutten, have they done it too fast? They should be pushing for finals. I was like, I feel like they're always in this middle bit and they're unwilling to see it through.
Yeah.
We talked about it with Rutten. Like, he wasn't in that bad of a spot, but they're so desperate for change all the time that they won't.
They change the coach. The next year they make finals.
Yeah.
Then the next year they miss out on finals after a big finals
coach.
Loss. Then they change the coach.
Yeah. It just seems to be a system that's not working.
Yeah. And I think I wish Brad Scott the best because he's picked up a poison chalice. And I don't know if he's going to get the time to turn it around.
He's going to come into a point two in a way. The first one I want to go is actually a more important one is that Melbourne are hopefully not going to have no Lever this week, but we'll definitely have no May.
Mm-hmm.
Could possibly have neither this week and neither the week after, depending on how bad their injuries are. They've got Port and Adelaide both in Adelaide in the next 2 weeks.
It's not good.
It's not ideal. We've seen what they've been like without them before. Their record without either of them is very poor. Mm. I think that's a that could
the
be
record with only one
debt.
Of them is fine though.
Yes, it is, but it's very poor when both are down, which I guess would be true for most teams when their key defenders go down. Petty has to go back, I think, is the obvious answer. In the meantime,
was Petty even playing?
Yeah, he played. Didn't he play forward last week?
I don't remember. It's all a blur to me, Jack.
Anyway, I'll move on to the point that brings Brad Scott into the conversation, because Ken Hinckley registered the impressive effort of 250 games on the weekend at one club for zero grand final appearances.
Yes.
Which he now leads.
It's the most.
It used to be Brad Scott there with him, but he's now been at two clubs and is a few games behind.
Yes.
Ken is now only 8 games away from the most games coached full stop, even at multiple clubs with no grand final appearances, with Bill Steven, who hasn't coached since 1980. It's kind of incredible that he's still there. I do wonder how long you can keep that going.
I was thinking about it earlier with the situation the Bulldogs find themselves in, and I just think, it's still within the last 10 years that that coach won them a flag.
Yeah, like Bevo's won them.
And the same thing with Adam Simpson and Simon Goodwin through the tribulations of the last couple of years. I keep thinking, well, he won them a flag. McRae could completely shit this year. He could shit the bed entirely. He won the flag last year, so they're not going to sack him. No fucking way.
He got runs on the board. But he hasn't even...
They couldn't even sack Dimmer.
He hasn't even made a grand final. That's the crazy part. Yeah. The most without a grand final win is Rodney Eat, who's coached 377 games at 3 different clubs, followed by Ross Lyon at 331 games.
Who Rodney Eat coached
Sydney
into
first, and that's where he reached the grand final. And then Bulldogs and Gold Coast afterwards, obviously no grand final appearances. Ross Lyon, we know, has made 3*4 grand finals. If you want to count the draw.
A lot of people don't. I saw some graphics on Instagram where they were counting down all the grand final wins. They didn't include that one.
The only other modern player in the list is Terry Wallace, who coached 247 games without making a grand final, Bulldogs and then Richmond.
What does he do now? Is he still list manager?
I don't know. I think he's the list manager. It's his job to get on trade radio, but he has to do something else for the rest of the year. I know Gettable runs all year long, but he's not on there.
Oh, God, Gettable.
I like that the AFL's just had one of the biggest scandals in like recent years. Like whether you see it as an actual scandal or not, it is in terms of media coverage. On the back of a really big talking point about concussion, heading into a grand final rematch where both teams are winless, and they're like, what about the free agents at the end of the year? And that still needs to happen today?
They're doing a podcast where they're talking about the potential number one pick for next year.
It's such a weird landscape that football exists in.
Like, those two are AFL employees. Surely they should be a part of, like, everything that's going on about the week.
With everything else. Wasn't it Cal Toomey who put together the Dacos 50-game ranking? I reckon my belief now is that, as a known Essendon fan, that he was, it was, like, subterfuge to try and, like, put too much pressure on him before the game.
Well, it has to be. It would definitely be in his worst 5 games,
for sure. There was another 50-gamer in that game who played much better.
Yep.
There was a 350-gamer on the weekend who had a better game, and a 150-gamer on the weekend who played probably the best game of the weekend, who I didn't hear almost anything about.
It was when the St Kilda player was face down, knocked out, and all they could talk about was Nick Dacos highlights
how
wonderful he's been for 49 games. It was embarrassing.
He snapped his collarbone in half from landing on his head and knocking himself out.
Was that this week?
That was this week.
Jeez, I don't remember anything, man.
That was when we were okay. That was Thursday.
Yeah, that was before we tested positive.
So Mason Woods just gotten hammered, smacked into the
destroyed.
Turf, and the commentary just like, oh, Dacos, though. It was such an odd...
It's so weird, and I feel like we need to pull back from it slightly because... If he continues to play like the way he did on the weekend.
And they took way too long to take the camera off Mason Wood as well.
Yeah, they kept showing the footage.
While he's convulsing just about on the floor.
Yeah.
That stuff, I felt like they were handling that better last year and the year before.
Yeah, well, they definitely didn't mega zoom in on it.
With the little ultra zoom logo in the bottom.
Anyway. That was interesting. But, like, look, Nick Dacos is just a kid. He's 20, turning 21.
Absolutely. And my point is always, I'm not begrudging Dacos himself for it.
It's the way the media are building him up.
The media bring frustration and fan vitriol on him by the way they treat him. Like, he's being so overhyped. It's like we all talked about, everyone understood what the West was doing to Harley Reid was weird.
Mm.
But somehow, because Dacos has played games, they can just keep piling this insane amount of pressure on him, despite the fact that he's only just played 50 games.
Yeah.
He's what, like 22, 21?
21, I think.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's outrageous, and they need to pull back, but they won't, because BT loves just the hype train.
Yes, he does.
And that's probably the biggest problem, to be honest, is the BT of it all. But
I really enjoyed he was back on the like that Brisbane game last year, where like he just kept talking about how Collingwood could still come back and win the year. St Kilda went to like five goals up with 10 minutes to go, or less, was like 6 minutes to go, and BT's like, oh, you know, this is just the stage is set for like one of those classic Collingwood. It's like, BT, give it up. Also, the fact that we had to deal with a highlight, which upon closer inspection may not have even been out of bounds.
I think it was out of bounds.
The highlight reel is just BT yelling about it being out of bounds and not the fact that it was an insane goal.
When has it ever not been?
You're right. But I saw it transposed with the Triple M commentary, and I was like, that makes it a great highlight now. When you watch the one from the official AFL feeds and it's just BT being like, I think that was out.
I genuinely think
that ball was out of bounds.
That is what started AFL 360 doing their multiple call,
big
moments things.
The Channel 7 screws them every time.
Yeah.
BT did the better call of the Boyd goal.
Yeah, that was different. It's on radio.
It is. I wonder what gets into them when they get into the Channel 7.
No, they're being paid to do it. Dwayne Russell came out the other day. Did you hear that interview?
No, I didn't.
Where he said, Channel 7 pay me, or Fox Footy or whoever, whatever one he's on, they pay me to sit there and be positive about everything. Goals, marks, kicks, whatever. I am positive, and then whoever's with me, Richardson, Hodge, whatever, they do the negative stuff. He's only there to talk positives about the game. That's what he's paid for.
Mm-hmm.
He does the catchphrases because that's what they give him the money for.
That's so frustrating.
It is frustrating because Dwayne Russell on the radio calls football.
Most of them do. That's the problem, isn't it? Like, most of the ones you get them on the radio, asterisk, Mick Malthouse not included, most commentators on the radio are so much better than on TV. And it seems to be understood by everyone that that's the case. Like, almost every footy fan is so frustrated with the state of TV commentary, and when they hear those same people on the radio, they can't get the disconnect.
Mm.
I don't understand why the TV companies want that kind of weird commentary that they get.
I think it's because they get buzz from the weird BT stuff, Roaming Brian and all that.
Yeah, and then it goes viral and whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. It is really strange, but hey.
There's a guy, I don't know his handle, but he tracks how one-sided commentary is. I think he was saying he didn't get to the Channel 7 games yet this year, but he did the Fox games, and he was saying that I think it was Hutto and everyone's new mate, what's his name, Matt Hill, were both, you know, great for one, not being biased in their calls, and two, using descriptive terms to describe what was going on, rather than, you know, with a beautiful left foot towards whatever, and then just forgetting what they're talking about and going to something else. She's actually just calling, and Petrarca kicks inside 50, finds...
Yeah.
Brown, who marks and turns and kicks towards the goal. Just like really simple what you should be doing.
I don't even care if they simplify it down and they're just like Petrarca to Oliver.
Yeah, that's Viney, fine. But
inside 50.
They don't do that. When Stewart almost took that mark, which is so funny that was the highlight.
And they kept showing highlights of him not taking a mark.
They weren't even calling the football.
No, they never do.
He was, and then after he took the mark, they had to try and retroactively get excited about the mark that they missed.
Have you noticed that every time they do, like, Mark of the Year, the audio is always them talking about something and then suddenly just going, oh, Petrarca! No, like, it's terrible.
It's so bad. I think that we are not the only people complaining about commentary, so it's probably...
Sounds like it's just us.
I am happy to call it early on this week.
I am dying.
I know you are dying dead zonked. What is... you already said that your tip for Game of the Week is St Kilda Essendon?
I believe it has to be. And even if St Kilda end up running away with it, it just proves my point. So I think that one... But, I mean, you can't not pick Brisbane Collingwood.
St Kilda fast scares me. I don't like it. I was worried. I saw it in Geelong, and I thought the only reason they didn't win that game was, one, because they didn't win the clearances somehow at the centre, but two, because it wasn't a wide enough game for them to get a run on. And then we saw it at the MCG against Collingwood, and it almost seemed like their fear of Collingwood coming back into the game kept Collingwood in the game at times. But when they got that run going, it's the kids. It's the ones who are like...
That Windiger looks so good.
Windiger, Wanganeen, Miller, Philippou, like those kinds of players just look fast and electric. Jack Steele's able to take a back seat with the way Windiger's getting the ball out of the middle.
His evasion is crazy. He's number one to watch for me in that club.
It's so good. And it stresses me out because it's a Ross Lyon team. But, yeah, their pace really showed on a bigger ground, and that will be the case at Marvel. It's quicker usually under the roof anyway.
It's going to be a huge test for Essendon, but I don't think you can pick anything besides Brisbane Collingwood.
Yeah, I think Brisbane Collingwood has to be it, especially for intrigue. But I think Freo Adelaide's a huge game.
Because especially if Freo goes 3-0.
Amazing. If Adelaide start 0-3, terrible, considering that most people had them finals maybe top four.
I had them potentially top six. So
it's a worry for them if they drop that low, but impressive for Freo if they can start, especially with the draw they've had. If they can start 3-0, they'd be stoked. Obviously, North's not huge, but if they beat Brisbane and Adelaide to get to 3-0 to start the season, they'd back themselves in to make the finals from there, surely. They get to play West Coast twice, guaranteed.
That's true.
And then he's got to find another 8 wins.
Yeah, they don't have Lachie Schultz anymore to lock those away. So
no, they've got Bailey Banfield. It's all good. I think that it's a bizarre start to the season.
It's very weird.
If you just left the top eight as it is now, it would be one of the weirder top eights we've had in a long time. You've got GWS, Sydney, Port, Melbourne, Freo, Geelong, Carlton, Gold Coast.
It's weird.
Only 3 Victorian teams, only 2 Melbourne teams.
You can't hear it, but I rolled my eyes so hard. I'm more mean for the case of...
With Geelong 6th and 7th, so Geelong Carlton 6th and 7th currently, that's one of the Melbourne games.
Yeah.
Melbourne's 4th. You'd have one game in Melbourne on the first weekend.
You wouldn't, because they would force an interstate team to play in Melbourne.
Like when Brisbane had to play Geelong in 04. I don't think they can anymore. I think they've changed the rules. I think that the interstate teams get to play a home final.
Oh, why didn't St Kilda get to play a home final?
Like a home game against Collingwood?
It was GWS. They had to play the MCG.
Did they? When?
In the finals, St Kilda. Played GWS at the
end. I mean a non-Victorian team.
Yeah, no, but like even St Kilda, Victorian team, didn't get to play a home game.
Yeah, you're right. You are right. And it was really, I was really funny browsing through the boards as a Geelong supporter.
I'm sure you were filled with some glee.
You don't get a home final? And then here we are 6 months later and they're all yelling about the fact they only lost to Geelong because they had to play at their home ground. And then a week later complaining they had to play their home game at the MCG against Collingwood. People are stupid.
Yeah.
More teams should have home grounds. Bulldogs should play all their home games at Ballarat. They barely lose there. They've won 8 of 12. Just, all home games at Ballarat.
Just play at Mars, but it helps when you play the same team every time.
I think they played Melbourne there a couple of times.
I thought it was usually North or Gold Coast.
It's usually North or Gold Coast, which helps the numbers a little bit.
Yeah.
That's our game of the round done. That's the most important part, other than the votes, which is the point of the podcast.
Yeah, that's why we're here. I think that's it.
Yeah,
don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs. If you do, just tell your boss when you come to work.
First.
Just come in, be like, hey, mate, I've done some drugs on the weekend. Please don't test me.
No worries, mate. Go home early. Tuck yourself in. We'll say you pulled a hammy.
You can find us at thebackpocketau.com and also thebackpocketau on all social media channels. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.